Today we'll be talking to Mr. Sergio L. De Leon, Tarrant County Constable, Precinct 5. It's January 21st, 2003, and we are at the University of Texas in Arlington, University Hall, Room 001, Arlington, Texas. Good afternoon, Constable De Leon. It's a pleasure to have you with us today at the University of Texas. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to come.
No problem. Delighted to be here.
We have three parts we would like to cover: your biography, your early childhood, your political career, and how you feel about issues and your opinions. We would like to start with your biography. We have your biographical sketch. Has anything changed since we received that?
With regard to the biographical sketch, there is a portion in the sketch that lists some of the early accomplishments of our office. What is not listed is the most recent aspect that happened to us, in which that we applied for, our office applied for a grant from the North Texas Council of Governments to do a bilingual public awareness campaign on legal dumping. And we applied for that, $75,000, and then were awarded it. And so this spring and this summer, we will be doing that. And if you may have read from some of the clips, the research that I think Mr. Gutierrez asked you guys to do, part of my campaign pledge and promise was to do something about the pervasive problem of illegal dumping in the area that I represent. And so that falls
into... Illegal dumping?
Illegal dumping.
Illegal dumping.
Illegal dumping.
And what is that?
Well, that's if you've ever driven down the highway or down the road and you've seen tires that are thrown out, if you see refrigerators thrown out, sofas, what have you. There could be large areas of debris, some that individually thrown out, some thrown out by contractors and so forth. And people do it for a variety of reasons. You know, lack of education of where to properly dispose of items like that. Some people do dump in those locations because they want to avoid paying the fees and so forth at certain dump sites. And it is a problem in my area. It may not be in your neighborhood or where you reside at, but it certainly is in ours.
And that's something that has come about since you've been in the office?
If you want me to expand more on it?
No, we have more things we need to
cover. I'd love to talk about it.
But that's one of the things that's not in your biographical sketch.
Right, right.
Okay. All right, you've signed the release form.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you. Let's begin. Tell us about your family. Who is Sergio L. De Leon? What does the L stand for? Is Sergio a family name? And if so, how many generations does it go back that you are aware of, or are you the first? Are you named after your grandfather, uncle, father, someone in your family?
I'm named after my father. My father is Sergio De Leon. I'm Sergio Leon. De Leon. And my father put the L in my name because he didn't want anyone to call me Junior. For some reason, he didn't like for other kids to be called Junior all the time. And he put the L in my name so they could just say that I was Sergio in my own right. They have a nickname that they call me, but I won't share that with you. But my father is a first generation Latino who came to this country and back in the 1940s or 50s. He went to public school in Fort Worth, graduated from Trimble Tech High School, started working in the manufacturing industry, I believe, and then went on to work for Union Pacific Railroad, where he retired. My mother didn't complete her high school education. I think she went as far as eighth or ninth grade, got married at an early age, previous marriage from marrying my father. Of which I had one brother and one sister, two other siblings from that other part of my mother's life. Two sisters total, with one brother who's deceased. He died in 1988. My mother retired from General Dynamics, what is now considered Lockheed. And she is by far one of the ones who really encouraged me a lot. My father gave me a lot of direction on the how-to, and Mom was like the cheerleader, always encouraged me to do various things. And so that's who I am, and that's my middle initial. And okay. My father, or I have an uncle in Houston who is also named Sergio, but I think that was just some kind of a fluke.
Okay. What about your grandparents? Where did they come from and their names, and also your parents' full names and your mother's maiden name?
Okay. My father's full name is, of course, is Sergio de Leon. My mother's full name is Susana Santiago de Leon.
And how do you spell that?
The Santiago or Susana?
It's
Susana? S-U-S-A-N-A, Santiago, just like the capital of Chile.
Okay.
And then de Leon. I didn't know my my grandmother, my mother's mother. She had already passed by the time I was born. I was born in 71. I believe she passed away in 69. My grandfather, Juan Santiago, I knew somewhat, but just because of the distance of where he lived and where I lived, living in Burleson, Texas, and then in Arkansas, really didn't get to know him as well as I would have liked to have. I did know fairly well my grandfather on my father's side, Fernando de Leon, and he had a very colorful career, of which my parents told me very little about back in his day. He was involved in, I think, the revolution, and Dr. Gutierrez probably know more about that than I would. But he was very politically savvy, always read the papers, and he and I would always discuss politics whenever I visited him. My dad's mother was very ill and very sick by the time I was born and died shortly thereafter. I have very few memories of her.
Okay. And you're married, presently?
Yeah, her name was Frances. Frances.
Okay. Frances, okay. Mm-hmm. And you're presently married?
Yes.
Is it your first and only wife?
Yes, and I hope it will be my first and only wife.
And what is her name and maiden name?
Oddly enough, it's Frances is her first name, and her middle or last name, maiden name, is Granados, Frances Granados. And we were married April 27th of last year, and we just had our little girl, born January the 8th, 2003, 12:33 p.m., weighed 7 pounds, 12 ounces.
Congratulations.
thank you. And her name is Elena, A-L-E-N-A, Susana, after my mother, Delia. She's growing.
And that is S-U-S-A-N-A?
Yes, ma'am.
And her maiden name, how do you spell that?
Francis. Granados. G-R-A-N-A-D-O-S.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So your parents and your grandparents, they were all from Fort Worth?
My father was from Mexico. My mother was from Fort Worth. Both sets of their parents were from Mexico.
And where in Mexico?
From my mother's side, they were from Guadalajara, Mexico. I think the state of Jalisco. And my Fernando de Leon and my grandmother Frances were from Torreon, Mexico. I don't know the state there.
Coahuila.
Coahuila?
Mm-hmm.
C-O-H-H-U-I-L-A?
Correct. We can.
You want to correct that?
That's correct.
Okay. All right. So your great-grandparents lived in Mexico.
That question would be best be asked of my parents, because okay. I don't want to give any misinformation.
All right. What are your parents' birth dates?
Dad has one coming up. He's January 31st of a long time ago.
Okay. And you were raised in Arkansas.
Mom's is 12/31. We were hoping that a little Elena would be born.
Oh.
31st for two reasons. One, her birthday, and the other, for the tax break. But
And where were you raised?
I was raised in several places. My youth, growing up, I was raised in Fort Worth on the west side, not too far from where I live now. I attended Holy Family Catholic School, which is right off of 30 and Brian Irvin Road. We moved to Burleson in 1979, and I went to Nola Dunn Elementary and then Pauline G. Hughes Middle School in Burleson, Texas. My father worked for the railroad mentioned he retired from there. He was transferred to Arkansas in the summer of 1984. And we moved up to Arkansas shortly after that, once he got established, in, I believe, January of 85. And so from 1985 through 1991, I lived in Arkansas.
85 to 90. Mm-hmm. So you were 13 years old when mm-hmm. you moved to Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
And is that Bigelow?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what was it like living in Bigelow, and are there many Hispanics there?
No. We were probably the first family to move to Bigelow, Arkansas. The county that we moved to, Perry County, was the ruralest county in the state. Roughly some 7,000 people countywide, with about as much population per square mile as Tarrant County. So you can imagine how dense and how rurally populated that place was. There were three high schools in the entire county. The high school that I went to was a combination of both middle school and high school. It went 7 through 12. And it was, when I first arrived, it was rather shocking, just the cultural shock of it all. Mm-hmm. Moving from a large school, had a lot of friends, it was a mixed, at Polly and Gene Keyes Middle School, moving to a school that had maybe two or three African Americans in the entire school, and me and my sister were the only Hispanics. And it was kind of tough mm-hmm. at first, but I adjusted shortly thereafter and decided to throw my energies into some things that were positive rather than fighting, every redneck in the school.
Mm-hmm. How do you spell the name of the middle school?
East End, EAST, space End, END, okay. High School, Bigelow. And,
in the middle school?
It was both. It was a combination of middle and high school.
Okay.
7 through 12. I mean, they had essentially nothing when I was there. Now they've got a football team. They got everything after I left.
Well, you probably started it.
Well, no, I didn't, but actually Clinton started all that.
Well, that's one of my, that's a later question,
mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
Is that what brought you to Fort Worth,
mm-hmm.
the Clinton
What brought
campaign?
Me back to Fort Worth was the campaign. I had told then Governor Clinton that whenever he decided to run for president, that I wanted to go home to work for him, and that I would do what I could to coordinate the efforts of the campaign in Tarrant County, for his efforts. And then when he finally decided to, I went first to Austin for a little training and then back up to Fort Worth to coordinate the Clinton efforts in late 1991 and early 1992.
Okay, well, we're going to go further into that when
okay.
we get to the political career section.
Sure, sure.
I think you mentioned your siblings. You have a half-brother and a half-sister?
I have a half-sister now. And a full sister, Teresa, or Terry, as I call her. Her last name is Warren, Warren. She lives in Crowley, right in between Fort Worth and Burleson. And she born on the 4th of July in 57. So that'll tell you how old she is. And we remain close.
Okay.
And then Erica just moved back from Arkansas and just got on with Lockheed. So she's doing a lot better.
Okay. Are you the oldest, youngest, or the middle?
No, I'm the baby of the family.
The baby.
And my other siblings always remind me of that.
Okay. Did any of your family members help you when you campaigned for
mm-hmm.
any of your...
Mm-hmm. All of them
offices.
Did. My first race wasn't for constable in 1996. My first race was for what township committee person in Perry County, Arkansas. And that just means I ran for precinct chair for those of you here in Texas. That's just a precinct chair. You win that position, you hold the election almost like you mm-hmm. do now. And up there, they call them township committee persons. Why, I don't know. They just do. So I ran for a seat on the Democratic Central Committee from the Union Township. And it was in 1990. I was a senior in high school. And running, all the odds were against me. ran, beat an incumbent then, and was 61% of the vote in the first time. Yeah. Clinton only got 55 in my precinct, and I got 61.
Oh.
And I never let him forget it either. Yeah, so.
Okay, well, we'll probably go further into that, too,
okay,
when we get to the political section. Do any of your siblings, have they ever held elective office?
No,
or are you
no.
the only one in the
I'm
family?
The only one that has held elective office. My mother and father campaigned vigorously for me. My sister, my older sister will contribute, and my other sister, she just doesn't want anything to do with it.
Okay. Where and when did you receive your education?
I first started college at the University of Central Arkansas in 1990 in Conway, Arkansas. And I left UCA to go work for the Clinton campaign. So I took some time out of my college education. And for a lot of us politicals, those seem to lag on because there's always an election that takes our time. Went to Tarrant County College. Started there, I believe, in 1992. From there, went to the university, or Texas Western University, before I graduated in 1998.
Okay, that concludes our portion of the biography, and I never did state my name in the beginning. I'm Pamela K. Bass, and I'm going to now turn it over to Camille D. White to cover the political career section.
Okay.
Good evening. How many terms have you served as Constable of Precinct 5?
I am in my first term, the second year of my first term.
The Constable served 4-year terms, correct?
That's correct.
And what are your duties as a Constable?
The duties of the Constable are really somewhat different from what the deputies do. Essentially, we all execute civil process, make arrests, do the writs of sequestration, the writs of attachment, all these other court orders. And writs is just a fancy word for instruction. We receive the instructions from the court. Sometimes we bailiff the Justice of the Peace Corps. But by and large, our primary responsibility is to handle all the civil process that we receive through our office. That means serving some of the child support papers that we receive from the Attorney General's office. Make an arrest for individuals who failed to pay the child support. It's really a multitude of court orders that we partake in, day out. Now, having said that, my role is somewhat two or threefold. One, to administrate, to do the actual work of a constable, service papers and so forth, and as an elected official, do my part to make sure that the Democratic Party, that we have a grassroots effort to lead on several fronts and to take a stand and position on various issues affecting the community.
Also, I was reading that one of the new duties that has been bestowed upon the constables is to tax, is it the tax, the land sales of delinquent tax properties?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry,
That is a responsibility. And it's so in-depth involved that all the constables, before I got to office, had gotten together and said that we need one constable's office to handle all of this because it's so in-depth and so thorough. And now Precinct 3 does all the delinquent tax land sales.
Okay, so it's not divided. There are 8 constables, correct?
There are 8 constables.
So it's not divided amongst you 8 constables. You guys decided to just put it into one office because that was...
Correct.
So that's
correct.
That,
it's special.
That one person's
right.
whole job that he
right.
does.
The commissioners allocated monies to this particular office to facilitate that need. Anytime we get it for our office, we just hand it over to Precinct 3.
Okay. And what is your starting salary?
Starting salary was about $60,000.
That's even?
Yeah, roughly. I'm just doing roughly.
And do you receive increases annually, or how are your increases done?
Increases are based by the commissioner's court, whatever they say, usually they give you a 2-3% cost of living adjustment every year. That's for all county employees, not just.
And that's annually, you said?
Yeah.
Okay. And you told us the first political position you ran for was a township committee person,
mm-hmm.
and you won that, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Did you, what was the next position that you ran for?
I ran for re-election in 94 and was in 92 and was unopposed. Thereafter, moving to Fort Worth and then running for constable in summer. Really, I started in the summer of 1995, but it was for the election in 1996.
Okay, so you served two terms in that position, and how long were those terms for?
2 years.
2 year terms. Mm-hmm. Okay. And you just mentioned your first bid for constable when you got here in 92. Were you successful in that bid?
No. I arrived in 92, but I didn't go in immediately and start campaigning for constable. That didn't come until 4 years later. What I did start to do was start laying the foundation and plant the seeds, if you will, for a future run for office. I didn't know that it would be constable. I thought it would be something else, but decided to run for constable.
I had served. What were some of the things that you did when you said plant the seeds? Did you hold town hall meetings, mm-hmm. just to go out, community meetings to make yourself known? How did you go about this?
How that came about was that working for the Clinton campaign opened up a lot of doors for me that otherwise wouldn't have been opened. And that's meeting a lot of the movers and shakers of the local political party and meeting a lot of future trial lawyers that would then become donors to my campaign that are now clients with certain papers for me. I also worked for a city council person. His name was David F. Chappell. He served on the Fort Worth City Council for a couple of terms. I served with him his last year on the council. And in that regard, I was able to meet many neighborhood leaders in the area that I now serve, many of whom are still active and involved in various aspects of the community, neighborhood associations, other civic organizations, and essentially just was active in their efforts, fighting for you know, to clean up their alleyway, fighting with them on citizens on patrol, worked with them on any other, you know, a number of issues. I can't recall all of them. And as a result, you develop a name for yourself and as someone who is committed and energetic and who will work to get the job done. As a result of that, I kind of like harness and catapult all of that in order to mount what I thought was successful, even though we didn't win a campaign in 1996.
So you ran in 1996,
mm-hmm.
and you ran against an incumbent, mm-hmm. is that correct? What mm-hmm. was his name?
His name was Jim Palmer.
And your race against him, the results were basically you gathered 45% of the vote, which I think is excellent. Running against an incumbent,
you
received 55%.
Correct.
So I think that in that first go-round, you definitely got your name out there,
right.
and you did a great job.
Thank
you. So what was the next position that, after you ran for that position and you weren't successful?
Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm.
Winner takes all, mm-hmm. loser goes home,
mm-hmm.
and you know, we
mm-hmm.
regrouped. So when you regrouped, what did you do?
To regroup, I just need to think back here for a second. Just trying to figure out what I felt like in the rest of 1996. And what I did. I got what I call the consolation prize. As a result of my efforts for running a good race and kind of throwing some energy in the party and so forth, I was elected to become a delegate to the Democratic National Convention in 1996. And when Clinton and Gore run for re-election. And that was nice. A lot of folks appreciated me doing it, and they kind of came to me and said, look, we'd like to help you out with this. And '97, you know, you just go about your regular life and figure out what you're going to do next. You know, you always keep contact with people, always keep your name out there. Started my neighborhood association and was active in other political campaigns, building up those political chips.
Okay, so the next office you ran for at that point was, did you run again for constable?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I ran for state rep in 1998.
And how did you fare in that?
I got my butt kicked. As every Democrat did in that election. I didn't think we'd ever see another day like we did this last election cycle, but we did. And I call it first November, whatever that day was, in 1998, the St. Democratic Day Massacre, because we all got beat top to bottom. and it's fared again in this last election cycle.
Now, was it in this race that, because there was some mudslinging that came out against you, mm-hmm. was it in this mm-hmm. race, or was it in the race that you currently are holding, they came out and they said, well, he hasn't paid his property taxes, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. you know he isn't really a sworn peace officer, and he's mm-hmm. running around town saying that he is. Mm-hmm. So, did that come out in that race, or was that in the race that you currently in? I mean, the position that you currently hold.
It was the 2000 race. Yeah, it was the 2000 race that all that came out. 1998 was it was a good year, good experience for me, and then I was really able to hone up and read up on a lot of issues affecting the citizens of Texas, because then you have to look at things from a different parameter. You're looking at issues that will affect all Texans, not just ones from your particular district. Granted, they come first, but you'll be voting on bills that will be affecting, you know, the citizens of the state. And it really gave me a good opportunity to meet a lot of people. It gave me a good opportunity to just sharpen my skills, my political skills. And as Mario puts it, my campaign manager, who Dr. Fittis knows, says, we're just going to do this to keep our knives sharp. And we did that. And even though we lost very bad, you know, I can say that I took a bullet for my party. Because really, I look back on it now, I should have never been in that race. But I did, and it was a good experience.
That race to which you were referring, there were six of you that were in that race, is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, in 1998... no one challenged me in the Democratic primary. So I was obviously the Democratic nominee. The incumbent at that time was Sue Palmer. Since redistricting, since a couple elections, that district is now District 99 instead of 89. And the rep holding that seat now is Charlie Guerin. So there was only the two of us from start to finish.
Okay. So as far as once you didn't fare as well in your representative bid, mm-hmm. what made you come back to run for constable again?
That's a good question, and I pondered that for a long time. You have to evaluate where you stand politically. I had already gone to my donors twice and asked them to help me. My thought was that they wouldn't be there a third time. You think about the community, they've seen your name on the ballot, and you labeled a loser. Did I have the fire in the belly to do it again? And I thought about that for a long, long time. And in the summer of 99, really, really, really had to have an honest heart-to-heart with myself and with a few of my political friends to see what we do. I was wanting to go to law school, and I had taken a trip to St. Mary's down in San Antonio. And on the way back was just deciding, well, do I apply or do I start running for constable again? And I put it off, and I'm a procrastinator. I put it off. And then I think as the fall rolled around, I had to make a decision, and everyone agreed that we'd give it one more go. And if I didn't win, then I obviously, hopefully, would become a better lawyer than I would be a politician. But, you know, as fate has it, you know, we got in that race, and my donors were there again. A lot of people in the Democratic Party were thankful that we did do what we did in 98 and developed a lot of political chips as a result of that, because everyone knew it was such a bad year. And they appreciated me for being out there. And even though I was tired, deep down inside, everyone else wasn't. And their kind of enthusiasm and energy really just kind of said, okay, let's go do this one more time. Plus, everyone in our little inner circle, my campaign circle, you know, was better at some of the things that we do now, some of the mail that we do, you know, a little bit more savvy, a little bit better than what we did in 1996. I had lost by 500 votes in 96. Obviously, by then, I had met 500 new friends, and so there were a lot of positive things there. I said, you know, what the hell, just go for it again.
So after this round, you won, and mm-hmm. the person that you ran against, it was like he was blindsided. He didn't expect for you to win.
Mm-hmm. So when did you talk to him?
No, sir.
Okay.
I just did some research.
His
that was one of his comments. He was actually, you know, he actually didn't think that he was like, where do I go from here now?
And you know what? They all think that way. They all think that way. And He was blindsided because he failed to get out of his office. Now, that office was in so much need of attention because it had so much potential. It had, can do so much good. And even the office itself, I remember my first day going in that office, how many of you have seen Barney Miller? It looked almost identical. I really mean that. And I said, you know, I told my mom was in town for that first week, I swore in. She asked how it went. I said, you know, you ain't gonna believe it, but the office literally itself was just as bad of attention as the district he served.
Yeah, I mean, because the guy had served, wasn't it like 19 years?
20, yeah, he'd served 20 years.
Okay, 20 years in that position, and I think you do probably get comfortable after a while.
You do,
right. And speaking of that, you know, I think you were young, and he kind of looked at you as a snot-nosed kid is mm-hmm. going to come in, and he's going to get his, you know, mm-hmm. and, oh, he's back again. Mm-hmm. And he's like shooing away a fly, mm-hmm. but, you know, the bigger they are, the harder they
fall. I tell you what, politically speaking, and the analysis that we did over the summer of 1999 was that he lived on false pretenses. He thought that he won because, by God, his name was J.P., and he was just there, and his people just adored the ground he walked on. What he failed to realize is that he had no way, no mechanism to turn out his vote. He didn't do any mail. He really didn't do any kind of communication to the constituency he served. He relied on what we call in the business just name ID, which is good. Don't get me wrong. I mean, hell, it beat me once before, twice before, and so I knew that was, you know, pretty something to consider. But he had no way to turn out the vote. In 1996, you had several other layers of what we call activity. You had a state rep race going on, and you had a state senate race. And those two particular campaigns were going to turn out voters. And there was pretty race-dominated races, and so chances are they were going to turn out majority Anglo voters who were just going to vote for the namesake, as opposed to who was really the more better qualified. And and so as a result, he won. Now, the difference is, in 2000, there was no other activity on the ballot. It was like, okay, let's go, I'll take you on again. This time, it's me and you in the ring solo. There ain't no one else to help you. You have to do your own heavy lifting. And that's what he did not have. He relied on too many other political barons and the party to do that for him.
So you, in turn, did a great job as far as with grassroots campaigning. Mm-hmm. You were mm-hmm. knocking on those doors mm-hmm. and meeting those 500 people mm-hmm. you didn't get before. Mm-hmm. So another thing I think that I heard you say, and, well, I didn't hear you say it, I'm sorry, I read you said it, was that there was some, you had a platform, mm-hmm. and you were mentioning things that had never been mentioned to be performed in that office before.
They have, but not here in Tarrant County. Other constables throughout the state.
So they were not in that office, as I was saying.
In that office, that's correct. Or, as a matter of fact, this county.
So when you came, and you were this new person on the scene, and you were mentioning all these bright ideas about, I want you guys to go out there and help, you know, combat truancy, and I want you to go out and I want you to clean up these neighborhoods, get rid of this. I want, you know, this graffiti out of these neighborhoods. And everybody was saying, you're crazy. We as constables don't have time. We have all these, you know, things we have to serve and this, that, and the other. But in turn, you turned around and you did the various things in the position. And I want you to tell us now how you introduced those things into mm-hmm. this job from your platform mm-hmm. that you were mm-hmm. speaking of.
How we kind of made good on the promises.
Yes.
We made good on the promises in several ways. And I'll go through them step by step. With regard to truancy, with regard to illegal dumping, with regard to neighborhood patrols. I'll take the neighborhood patrols first. One of the things that I introduced for this office that wasn't done in Precinct 5, but was done in other constable offices. Some of my colleagues did this. And I knew it was a very doable deal. Despite the naysayers, despite all those folks who, you know, spoofing them, we have very little to do except attack. And that was to put the constable and his deputies in uniform, to mark the vehicles. And that little thing, which always a matter of a decision, to show in some little leadership, would send a very strong signal in the neighborhoods. What I mean by that? Well, just going up and down the street in a marked unit, and someone in uniform sends a louder message about thwarting crime than anything else. My predecessor had unmarked units and had his officers in plain clothes. Today, I'm proud to say that one day out of the week, a member in our office is in uniform, and all of our vehicles, with the exception of one, are marked. And we're going about in these neighborhoods doing what we need to do. If we see, for example, one of my deputies had recovered a stolen car. Another one captured a burglar. Others do minor traffic stops, run a red light or a stop sign in a particular neighborhood. These are the small positive things that we can do with an office the size of 7. Granted, we're not Fort Worth PD, we're not Tarrant County Sheriff's Office, but we can certainly do our part. I'm proud to say that we've done our part.
Why are you on that subject? Because mm-hmm. that was one of the things I was going to ask you. Mm-hmm. Because I was also noticing when I was doing a lot of research that you mentioned uniforms, and then this other candidate that was running jumped on the bandwagon. Oh, yeah, that's a good idea. You know, I support that. Mm-hmm. But
they all did, actually.
When you're speaking of patrol, I know that you were the chairperson for Alamo Heights, is mm-hmm. that right? Are you mm-hmm. still the chairperson, or did you train somebody to take over for you?
I try to train someone to take over, but unfortunately, with that neighborhood is essentially full of senior citizens. There's some new families now starting to come in, and trying to get participation in the neighborhood level just really wasn't there. And so our association is kind of dormant. I'm hoping someone will step forward to take it over. My responsibility is kind of overwhelming me as a public official, as a dad now, and just trying to attend other neighborhood associations throughout the district. But there still is an active Citizens on Patrol. I try to help them as much as I can and assist them whenever they need it. Now, did you have any other...
Well, the reason I was asking you about that is because I felt that there is no more trouble if you're a constable driving around on city gas, if you see a fence that's falling in, for you to, you know, make a mental note. When I come back here, I'm going to jot this address down. And, you know, in Dallas, we have this 311 number for city services. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. I mean, citizens can do the same thing. But, you know, when you're working with crime watcher groups, you try to train people to do this and let mm-hmm. them know mm-hmm. that if your light is out, don't just sit there with your light out all month. Call
right.
and get it
right.
fixed to help, you know. So that was something I really thought when I read about your ideals was that, you know, these people are crazy. Some of these things you were talking about didn't take any more resources at all.
Right, right. It's just the frame of mind, the leadership, becoming proactive, showing some initiative. I'm glad you said that. One of the things that I do, and I'm serving papers up on the north side of our area, Precinct 5, and I see an illegal dump site or I see an area that needs attention, I pick up the phone and call the City Code Compliance Department or Waste Management and say, you know, we've got a mess out here, or I go talk to some people. Do you see, you know, vehicles coming in day or night and trying to throw their debris in your neighborhood? And if so, I mean, this is who you're supposed to call. And that's part of what that public awareness campaign is going to do now. It's going to provide information to citizens, going to arm them with information about the health and safety code. What's a violation, what's not a violation. If you see it, here's who you call.
Now, there's this other project that you had that I really loved also, and I just want you to elaborate on that for us some more also. You've partnered with some people and you sponsored, basically workshops to combat truancies at high schools?
That's a long story too, but I'll make it as short as I can. Truancy is a very, very serious problem, as all of you know, particularly amongst Latinos in the inner city that I represent. And it seems like the school district was always trying to sugarcoat the problem, trying to play with the numbers to make it look as if it was okay and it wasn't as bad as it really looked. It's a very, very serious problem. Matter of fact, this morning I was out trying to find one of them. The school district did something unique with the city of Fort Worth. Prior to my taking office and winning, the school district would file cases, truancy cases, either truancy or parents contributing to truancy, in the respective justice of the peace courts. They would have a subpoena for the parent and for the child to appear before the JP court, and then a judge would hear them out and render a decision. Now, once I got elected, once I was sworn in, that policy had changed. The school district entered into an agreement with the city of Fort Worth. And what they have done, and you may have read about it already, is that they created one municipal court to hear nothing but truancy cases. And so now the municipal court is issuing out those subpoenas and the city marshals are serving. So it's almost like I preached on this and I campaigned on it and was going to try to do something about it. And once I got able to do something about it, they had did something totally different, and it's set up in that form, in that fashion. Okay, that's set up. What do I now do to try to help do something about truancy? About 90% of Precinct 5 falls within the domain of the city of Fort Worth and the school district of Fort Worth. So therefore, they've got their own separate deal. Nothing's going to change that. We still serve some subpoenas for the Lake Worth ISD, which is, again, about 10% of my district. Well, I approached the school district officials, and I said, look, this is a very bad problem. This is a serious problem. How can I help? And one of the areas they looked at that I could help in is to join them in their SART meetings. And that is just an acronym for the Student Action Review Team Meeting. And we're in one high school, Trimble Tech High School, usually during the springtime, more so than any other time of the school year, I participate in those meetings. That meeting is with myself, a district attorney, parents, the student, school officials. And they sit down, we all sit down with the particular student and parent to try to find out why that child is missing from school. And if there is a very serious problem, they refer over to the social service agency. If it's the child just wanting to be problematic, then the assistant DA who's on hand files a case with the municipal court. And it was modeled after the program that I had talked about that's administered in Austin with their constables and with their school district. But the only difference is that city marshals are doing it and the school officials are doing it. And I thought, well, that was great. They've modified it somewhat, but at least I have a role in the truancy process in Fort Worth. Now, we are about to embark on another plan, idea, and that's to partner with the city of Fort Worth to, free of charge, deliver the subpoenas to the students and to the parents and to make arrest whenever there's an arrest warrant. What we'll have to do for the legalese is to just change the style of the suit where it says direct any city marshal to go arrest this particular person or serve this particular person, it'll direct any peace officer. And if we're able to change that, I don't think they'll have any disagreement because I'm offering this free of charge on a volunteer basis. That way I can say, hey, we're doing both the preventive end with the START meetings and the enforcement end. And so I'm hoping to have that enacted here shortly.
That's great. As your role as constable, what is one of the greatest accomplishments that you're most proud of that you were able to enact so far?
All of them. All of them. Because so many people said we couldn't. And here we are, we're doing something about truancy. We're doing something about, you know, crime and our neighborhood patrols. And, you know, I said along the campaign, nothing precludes an elected official from taking a little time to do some research and getting a grant to do a little good for the community at no cost to the taxpayers. And boom, we did it. We got $75,000 to do a bilingual public awareness campaign. And, you know, I'm going to probably, as soon as we start doing that, mail a copy to my favorite reporters, the Star-Telegram.
Well, you know, at least they did give you some props. They mentioned in the article
that
you came to them when it came to that illegal dumping, and you, before there was even grant money that was talked about, you came to them and you offered your services. Mm-hmm. So they did do that for you. I got to.
They did do that, and that's a different reporter, and he's the one that covers the county stuff. But that's another good story. We're Constable Jack Allen, he had the illegal dumping program for Tarrant County. And because of some mismanagement, the city opted not to renew it. I had vied for the program, told them that we would do a better job of it, and we could put some safeguards in there to measure accountability. And if there was some reason that they didn't like it, and the numbers showed it, they could pull it away. But they felt like they had been burned by my colleague and therefore didn't want to enter into any kind of agreement whatsoever. But I lobbied the mayor and the members of the council, who I've got a great rapport with, and the city manager, to no avail, but then had to go get the grant elsewhere. Just more than one way to...
Let me ask you this question, because I know you're an ambitious person, and you have a lot of things you want to do. What is the next step for you? Are you going to run for constable again, or do you think you'll...
I will seek re-election, we're actually going to start this year. It's my goal to raise at least $50,000 or $60,000 by December 31st, 2003. So I don't have to spend my time raising money in the crucial primary months of January, February, and March. it takes a lot of time to do that. So we're going to start and we'll have some activities. I'd love to put all of you on my mailing list.
And I would vote for you if I were your precinct. I definitely would. Can you tell me how did you mentioned your campaign person's name, Mario.
Mm-hmm.
Are you a political science major?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So did you work with Mario a lot in with your working to set up your campaign, or did you just let him go about and do all the designing and planning, and you said okay, or was that political person and you just saying, well, maybe we should try this?
Well, he's a very unique individual, and you will probably read about him one day.
What is his last name, by the way?
Mario Perez.
Perez?
Yeah. I met him through a mutual friend of ours. And the first time I met him, we protested the Republican State Convention that was held in Fort Worth that weekend. And we marched all the way from the county courthouse all the way down to the convention center. And so that's how I met him. And at first I thought he was a little bit too radical for me, a little more moderate, a little more radical. But we just became friends and had a lot of discussions through, you know, a lot of evenings. And he brings to this little circle this element. I mean, as far as the design and helping me craft the message, I can essentially bring the ground troops and a good persona and can hold myself okay as far as the crowd is concerned. But together, you know, we make a pretty good team because he helps with message development.
So did you have a fundraiser chairperson or?
Mm-hmm. I had several people.
What were the members on your team, I guess I should just go ahead and ask.
From which race?
The last one.
A gentleman by the name of Luke Ellis, who is an attorney in Fort Worth, and served as my campaign treasurer. Luke is a very prominent attorney who serves as campaign treasurer for the mayor of Fort Worth in his election bids, as he does for one of the state reps, State Rep Lon Berman. So his name brings a lot of credibility to the business community and the political community. As a result of getting him on board, he was able to help raise some money. We also raised some money from some labor unions and some family and friends, and then we borrowed some. And my adopted grandfather, Joseph W. Bleeker, serves as honorary chair of my campaign committee, and he is very generous to me at times, campaign-wise, and he helps us raise money.
I'm going to ask you two last questions, mm-hmm. then we're going to move on to the next section.
Okay.
What are the boundaries of Precinct 5? What do they cover?
Mm-hmm. It's almost half pie-shaped. If you go from 820 and 35 on the north, 35 south to 820, everything that is west of 35 up until about Bryan Irving Road. We have the majority of the inner city with the exception of the east side. Although I should caveat that saying that in redistricting, we picked up a couple of precincts that are on the east side of 35. Not very far into 35, but just on the Echo Lake area, if anyone is familiar with Fort Worth. That is now in Precinct 5. The Carter Park Neighborhood Association and the Brentmore Neighborhood Association are now in our area. It has your Latino areas, Diamond Hill, North Side, Far North Side. it has the really the best and the most challenge. We, you know, those poor neighborhoods up in the north and south side, like Worth Heights, to the most affluent. We have Mistletoe in there, which is off Forest Park Boulevard. Crestwood, which is behind Greenwood Cemetery, if any of you are familiar with that area. And Ryan Place, with some of the, you know, nicer neighborhoods. And then Worth Heights, Rosemont, and then the west side where I live, which we call Arlington Heights. And we have a predominantly heavy concentration of African Americans in the Como community. I want to say we're evenly split, a third, a third, a third.
My last question is, I know that you're the youngest person to ever hold this office. And what I was wanting to know is if you can give information to any young person who wants to run for something, any encouraging words. I know you've gone to several training sessions, mm-hmm. not just the one that you went to. You said you made a trip to Austin. Mm-hmm. I know you've gone to I think it was LULAC or what have you, set up a mm-hmm. session to train mm-hmm. Mexican Americans mm-hmm. on how
Southwest to Southwest voter did
how to campaign mm-hmm. and whatnot.
I would recommend any person who has a desire, interest in public service to just do it. Do it before you get discouraged by other people who are around you. And I hate to say this, but you'll get discouraged by a lot of the political insiders because they want to limit the playing field to keep a lot of people out. So they know who to contact and who to play with. And if they can keep someone out, I mean, trust me, they'll do it. They tried to do it to me, but I didn't let it happen. Get involved and just do it. Granted, there are a lot of obstacles and challenges, but they can be overcome. And not when you're first time out, but eventually you'll get it. There is a young man who just swore in, I don't know, today or this past week, who's 23 years old and served in the House of Representatives. Patrick Rose from near the Austin area. I can't. You know who he is? Yeah, positive. You know, great guy, and he was the only silver lining for Democrats this last political season. And he did it by calling anybody who knew who'd give him a dollar. He knocked on doors, and you know, that old-fashioned grassroots. You know, it gets you over the hump. And if you decide to do it, do it. But if you have any interest, just do it. Just get out there and do it, and don't let anyone discourage you. We're glad you did it. Like, what was the poet? I can't remember the poet's name. Better to have loved and lost than to never loved at all. Better to have run and lost than never run at all. So that's.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay. We'll go to the third phase now. Your opinions?
Is this where I have to bring in my attorneys?
And the issues. But before we move on, I had one question. I noticed on your resume that you have another job currently.
Mm-hmm.
No?
Constable, that's it.
Okay, well.
You sure? If you got it?
No, it's in the notebook I lost.
Those are old. Those are old resumes. What did you think it was? Maybe I can clarify.
It was something about public relations, something. It was something 99 to the present. Said?
Oh, well, that was an old one I had in the files. It's not now.
Okay. It's not. So being constable is a full-time job.
Full-time job.
You don't have time to have another job.
No.
Okay. All right. We'll go on to our third.
That pays. My father's one.
Well, you look pretty rested to be a new father.
Well, actually, I was up all night. I was telling Edward on the way over. I don't know how we're going to get through all this afternoon, but we'll see.
Okay. What do you feel leadership is?
Well, I feel leadership is just taking a stance and running with it. Whatever you feel needs to happen. They can come in various forms, various fashions, in a neighborhood, in an organization, in a community. Leadership just showing some kind of initiative.
Okay. Who is the most effective Mexican-American leader today?
Good question. I would have to say that we sorely lack in this area. I would say Henry Cisneros would be probably about the best. There's no one figure that comes to mind other than Henry Cisneros at this point.
What is his position?
He's former housing and urban development secretary under Clinton. He's now in private business running something American Vista building houses throughout the country. He may run again for public office. Mm-hmm. But if for any one particular Mexican-American official or someone who inspires me, there's really, I'm sorry to say, not one that I can turn to and help or ask for assistance.
Okay. Which is the most effective Mexican-American organization today?
Yeah, there are a lot of them out there, but I don't know them well enough to really give a good informed opinion. I mean, there are a lot of American GI Forum, LULAC, MALDEF, NALEO, they're all out there. And I guess MALDEF did a really good job in this redistricting, so I'd have to say MALDEF after the month.
And what does MALDEF stand for?
The Mexican American Legal Defense Fund.
Okay.
Or legal, I think that's right, right? Yeah.
Okay, what is the most pressing issue facing Mexican Americans today?
Integrating with new immigrants, with immigrants. There already exists a division in the Hispanic community against first, second generation Latinos and those that are just arriving from Mexico, from south, real deep south Mexico, Central America.
So they don't want to?
I don't see the integration. I mean, you can almost, it's two distinct groups and there's no integration or there's no meshing of the two. And if you ever had that, it'd be a powerful group, a powerful group. Matter of fact, we've got a meeting on Thursday with some journalists to discuss this very same issue. One of the challenges that elected officials have is trying to serve all the needs of the community. And I can say, I know there's one segment that is not being served. I know because I don't hear from them. Why? Because they're not integrated in the mainstream society. They're not involved in neighborhood associations. They're not with the COP. They don't go to the PTA meetings. And so I'm going to figure out how do we harness, how do we go out and essentially take government to them and how can it be useful. And there are a lot of other issues, you know, that go on beyond that, that they have, you know, fear of getting turned in to INS and deported and a distrust of government and authority. So, I mean, I think that's the next biggest issue facing Latinos today.
Well, that will give you something to work on.
Oh, it will. It will.
Okay.
It will.
And what are the underpinnings of tension between Mexican-Americans and African-Americans, if any?
I think there's some, but I think it may be just essentially in working together. I know that several people in the past have tried to bring the two groups together, and a lot of it has to do with just egos, really. One wants to be the big dog and claim credit for this and that. And if we can ever get through that or beyond that, I think we'd be all right.
Okay, let me see if I have any more questions. That concludes that section. But I had some questions I wanted to ask you. For someone that wants to be in politics and someone that's maybe in high school or college, if they have aspirations to be in politics at that young age, what would you suggest that they do at that early age to start building on where they want to go in the future?
Keep a good database. Keep track of all of your friends and your acquaintances.
And you started young, at 13. Is that, you were 13 when you were with, pictured with President Clinton in Arkansas?
It's getting involved. Take advantage of everything that's before you. One of the things that I do is I got involved in a lot of organizations. Future Business Leaders of America, Young Democrats, Future Farmers of America, if you can believe that, and just a whole host of other organizations that allows you to meet other people, to learn about problems, to work together to find solutions for those problems, to work on your public speaking skills and your presentation skills. Those kinds of things are important. And just really find out what you strongly believe in and what it is in your community or in your state that you'd like to change. And you have to look at it from that perspective. I mean, all, as Tip O'Neill said, all politics is local. So, Pam, I'm encouraging you to run. I know you want to do it.
Well, I remember that, I remember a picture of Bill Clinton when he was with
Kennedy.
Kennedy, and he was about 13.
Mm-hmm. In the Rose Garden.
So maybe we will be seeing you on the ballot for president someday.
I don't know. It all depends on how I do a good job of constable. If I do a good job, I can legitimately ask the voters for a promotion.
Okay.
Are all constables, are they required to be peace officers?
Yes. Any individual wishing to be a constable or deputy sheriff or municipal PD must have the TCLOS license. And then you have to go through a police academy in order to obtain that. But once you get your license, and I showed it to that reporter who wrote that story, by the way. Once you get your license and you're essentially a peace officer awaiting certification upon being part of a particular agency. But you have to go through the police academy and you have to get your TCLOS license. And that stands for the Texas Commission on Law Enforcement Officer Ethical Standards.
So once you complete the training, mm-hmm. do you need to just send money down to Austin to get your... Because
no,
you send money to Austin.
You take a... it should be included with your fees. Now, if you do it like I did, I went to Tarrant County College Northwest Campus to their police academy. And I paid fees up front and went through it. And included is all the forms that you have to send to Austin and the fingerprinting. And there are various fees associated with that. If you sign up with a larger law enforcement agency like Irving or Fort Worth Police Department, they'll pay for those for you. And they'll actually pay you a stipend or give you a salary as you go through. I unfortunately didn't have that and go through with that. So it was a long summer of 2000.
I have a couple of questions to ask you while you're digging up there. Other ones. Mm-hmm. What happened to you at that early age to get you hooked on talking?
Good question. That was... it was in 1980. I was watching TV. And I watched the Republican and Democratic conventions that year and was just amazed by it. You know, early on you get excited about things that aren't so significant today, like the balloons and the speeches and the crowds and the signs and the cheering and all that. And that kind of sparked the interest. Later on in school, I was reading a lot about John Kennedy and Robert Kennedy and just read a lot of books. And that, of course, led up to 1984. My mother took me with her when she went to go vote. And just those number of things, it just all led together. And of course, you know, meeting Clinton in Arkansas back at an early age and just saying, hey, this is what I want to do.
Well, that was my second question. Why don't you tell this story? How did you talk? What did you talk about?
It was pretty neat. It was March of 1985. And at that point in my life, I don't now, but did then. I hated Arkansas and wanted to come home to Texas. And why did my parents, what did I do that was so bad to forsake me to such an area? All that kind of stuff, what you think? And Dad, and I have to give my father a lot of credit. He was like, now, wait a minute, calm down. He said, you saw that governor on TV, you want to go into politics one day, why don't you use this time and use this energy and write him a letter, tell him what you think, what you like, and see if he writes back. And, oh, Dad, the governor's not going to write me back, I'm just a kid. A big old high school, the smallest school probably in the whole state of Arkansas. Well, having said all that, I did write the letter, I had no idea how to write it. Business letter, and so my father helped me and wrote him a letter, and I have a copy of the letter to this day, and a copy of the response that he sent me back, and he wrote me back, and he said, De Leon, I really enjoyed your letter, thank you for your thoughts and your views on education, really, appreciated that, thank you for your interest in public service, because of that, why don't you spend a day at my office and contact so-and-so. I'm sure it'll further spark your, interest in your political career. And he put at the end of the letter, never lose your desire to make your state and nation a better place to live. And I'll never forget that. And I thought, wow. And so I did. We set it up for the education was real big to him back then, and I didn't think it'd be a good idea to skip a day of school to go down to the governor's office. So we set it up for the summer, and I went to the governor's office, I think it was June 5th or 6th, 1985. The one that hangs in my office is signed by him, and if you ever get a chance, come down and see it. And I've also got one next to when I went to the Oval Office, and they're about 10 years apart in that letter, from the photograph in the Oval Office and the photograph in the governor's office. But anyway, I went down there and was coordinated through his cousin, Marie Clinton, who I still know and a good friend. And she helped me out through the day, and I just got a tour of the Capitol and saw all the various departments and the both chambers of the legislature. And I had a schedule to go for a photo session with him at the end of the day. But while I was working with Marie, he came in. And he just came in and was talking to a lot of the staff members. And he was, you know, a very warm, friendly guy. And I was writing something down, and, you know, he put his hand on my shoulder and, you know, said, "Hey, little man, what are you working on now? And they've already got you to work." You know, just making very small talk. And I just like, "Oh, wow, you know, it's the governor." You know? And then I thought that would be it for the day. We got some pictures there. That are also in my scrapbook. But for the formal photo session, it was in the governor's conference room, which is right outside his personal office. And I wanted to see his personal office so bad. And when I saw him taking pictures with other people in front of the fireplace in the governor's conference room, I was disappointed. I was going, "Oh man, I gotta see his office." And when it came time for me to go up there, he said, "No, we'll just go ahead and come on back to my office." And so I thought, wow, this is really cool. At that time, Chelsea had a little desk that she would sit at and play at. And there, he had two or three Hispanic staff members, and one of them was Carmen Fowler. I have a last name, but she was a Latina. went to go work for him in the White House later. But he was like, "You know what?" He asked me where I was from, where I lived, and what state I was originally from, because he read some of the letters and so forth. And he said, "Well, you know what?" I said, "What's that?" He said, "You really made Carmen, the staff member, real happy." He says, "Why is that?" "Because you have really increased or doubled the percentage of Hispanics in my office."
Do you have that picture that you showed us?
Yeah.
That we can have for the record? You can.
Well, that's just it. I mean, a lot of this stuff.
The interview here.
I don't know what you. I've got a lot at home.
The one you had when you were a little boy. Can
this
you
one?
Show it to the camera?
This one here?
Yeah.
Okay.
And you were 14 there?
13 or 14, but it's dated on the back of that, if you guys want to pass that around. So that's how that came about, and I never forgot it, and it became pretty good.
So that's August 27th of 1985.
Mm-hmm.
So you were 14.
I think so. I'll take your word for it. And I don't have a copy, though. We should have brought that one that I had in the office, in the Oval Office. Maybe you'll invite me back, and I can bring that back.
So has Clinton offered you a job anywhere recently?
Well, not a job, but I did go work at the Democratic National Committee in the summer of 1993. And it was up there and during the whole health care deal that Hillary was trying to start back then, and really enjoyed it. Never did ask for a job. From the administration, just because I didn't have my degree. I mean, I didn't think there was any way they'd give it to me without a degree, because it was, you know, those positions, they were always so competitive.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought, why, as a friend of mine told me, who Mr. Gutierrez knows, Willie Garza, he said, why try to, you know, carry someone else's water? You know, why don't you be the guy?
Rudy Garza?
No, Willie.
Willie Garza.
And he told me, he said, "Why don't you be the guy, and why don't you start, you know, embarking your own political career?" Not a bad idea. I guess I'll go ahead and do that.
Let me ask you something else about being constable. You're elected on your own right, as are the four county commissioners and county judge.
Correct.
Would you explain to the class how, in addition to the budget you have, how do you lobby to get the votes for things you want, or to keep the budget or increase the budget from the commissioner? How do you go about doing your politics inside the courthouse?
Good question. I just try to keep the budget director on my good side. And she is an individual who is sharp as a wit, knows the ins and outs, she'll know my budget backwards and forwards more so than I will. And I just try to keep a good relationship and a good positive rapport with her. and lobby her at the appropriate budget times. There are several occasions where we've gotten increases in the budget. This last cycle we didn't get any. So it fluctuates, and she's pretty fair, and that's what I like about her. Others, I just have to really lobby the commissioners for any kind of idea that I want to have. And fortunately, I didn't have any trouble this last time because the commissioners had to vote on this proposal. Anytime any governmental or any constable, any JP, anyone enters into some kind of agreement with anybody else, it has to be voted upon by the commissioner's court. And so what I used as a selling tool was that this was not costing taxpayers any money. And this is essentially free money, and it was going to do for a lot of good. And there was no way they could, rain on my little parade. And so they went ahead and supported it. There's one Democratic colleague that I have on the court, Commissioner Bagsby, who you guys have interviewed here, who's been of some assistance, and the others, you just try to keep a good relationship with. And don't get in any trouble. You don't get in trouble, they'll work with you. If you're negative newspaper all the time, they probably won't.
Similar kind of question, but this has to do with redistricting, which you mentioned. Mm-hmm. As soon as you won, mm-hmm. the census was over, the commissioners mm-hmm. got a mandate to redistrict not only the commissioner precinct mm-hmm. lines, but the JP and constable. How did you go about protecting your turf and getting the district you wanted, if you did?
The in redistricting, precinct 5 was underpopulated. In essence, they took the number of registered voters or the population in Tarrant County, divided it by 8, and it had to meet a certain category where you should be, 5,000 over, 5,000 under of the mean. We were underpopulated, and we had to essentially grow. And so what I did was I had to just really handpick, cherry pick some of the precincts that I wanted. Everywhere that I could possibly grow, I would take in some Republican water. And so I had to pick precincts that were a lot of swing voters and where the Republican vote wasn't too heavy. And I traded out with my colleagues for precincts that were 70-80% predominantly Republican. And it was just one of those, little backroom deals where I say, hey, this is where I want to switch out. And it's like, okay. And you just work with, I had to work with my JP on that. And all the constables and all the JPs had to work together because it's essentially our geographical boundary. It's not Constable Precinct 5, it's the JP and Constable District for Precinct 5, as is for every other precinct in Tarrant County.
You talked about donations and donors, but we didn't give a specific amount. How much did you spend in the last race to get elected and the one before that for the state rep?
For the race for Constable in 2000, we spent nearly $50,000, and probably about 80% of that was raised, 20% was in loans, one to a financial institution, and to two other individuals who loaned us money. For the state rep race, I'm going to say it was about $100,000. 60 of it was raised. We had a couple of bank loans, and then we had some that were a lot of in-kind donations. My first race for Constable, we spent about $10,000. And my first race in Arkansas, only race in Arkansas, I think it was about $355.
That was the filing fee?
The filing fee was 20. It was getting in Arkansas. The filing fee this last time for Constable was $800. In 96, I filed by petition and had enough signatures in order to waive the fee, the filing fee.
The city of Fort Worth and the legislative delegation does not include a single Hispanic and has not for some time. Why is that in Tarrant County, Fort Worth?
I think it's that way because, unfortunately, there are a lot of Latino leaders in that north side area who want to, who do not want to relinquish any kind of role in the community they have and essentially will not lift up another Latino. I hate to say it, but it's true. I've seen it happen. And I think that's one of the reasons why is that we're our own worst enemy. And until we get a lot of progressive, younger people in the political fray, I don't think we'll see very many changes. There are currently, I think, two Latino candidates for city council in the north side area, the one that's most predominantly Hispanic. One is an attorney, the other, I think, is a former teacher or retired, he still might be teaching. And they, one of them, the attorney, is receiving a lot of flack from the old Hispanic political guard. And I warned him of it, told him it would be forthcoming, but to expect it. He didn't believe me, but he believes me now. Those elections are coming up in May. There's another district that's only 55% Latino, and that's in the south side of Fort Worth, and that's occupied by Wendy Davis. And she was a very, very strong supporter and ally. Actually, she's pictured here on one of our mailers. She came out and endorsed me, openly endorsed me, and her husband was a very generous donor, and he also had the was a major shareholder in the lending institution that loaned us the campaign loan for that last election. So I think that's why, is that we're our worst enemy. You've heard the crab or the lobster story, and I think it's because of that.
Do you hire and fire your 7 deputy constables?
Yes, and when you're outside of the political domain, you love civil service. When you're in it, you hate civil service.
Well, but I say that if you can because hire and fire, you don't have civil service.
No, we do have civil service. I can hire them, and I can fire them, but they have the option to appeal to the civil service, and we are experiencing that now. And it's just a long, tedious process, more of a headache than anything else.
Last thing, are you going to try to be a national delegate in 2004?
I don't know.
Politics, you're still going to be involved in 2004?
Yeah, I want to be involved. I don't know who to endorse. I'm leaning Kerry, maybe John Edwards, or I may try to go as an undecided delegate and just cast a vote at the convention. But I don't know. We'll have to see. Love to hear who you think you're going to support. Nobody?
Well, we have to get the whole group of candidates and likely suspects. Mosley Braun, the former senator from Illinois, is saying she might run. Mm-hmm. Sharpton just said he will run. Yeah. So I think we're going to have maybe a couple of dozen candidates at least to pick from.
I don't think she's going to do it. I don't think she's going to do it. I would really wish she would.
Elizabeth Dole for vice president.
No, she's a Republican.
I mean she might be a candidate for vice president.
Might be a candidate for vice president. Well, you know, if the Democrats pick a female nominee, I'm pretty sure the Republicans will. Yeah. I don't know. Bush said he's not going to dump Cheney, so we'll have to wait and see.
Do you belong to any of the state associations or national of the constables or peace officers?
Yeah, I belong to the Texas Justice of the Peace and Constable Association. Nalea and some of these other civic organizations. Nalea, Lulai.
So you belong to some of those ethnic groups? Organizations?
But as far as the position is concerned, the JP Constable Association, of which I sit on the legislative committee, was going to Austin several times throughout the year to monitor some of the legislation that could adversely affect constables. We'll be watching that closely.
Anybody have any other questions? Or has anybody got a written question that didn't pass it up?
Yes, sir, in the back.
Does any of your precinct encompass anything less than Brian Irvin Forward?
No. We stop at Brian Irvin Road. Do you? You need to move. And what's your name so I can make sure that we
Jamal
keep it.
Clark.
Okay. Jamal Clark. All right. With a wink wink. You looking for a job? All right. All right. Any others?
Can you state your name before you state your question, please?
My name is John Gilmore, and my question is, broadly speaking, what is your ideal conception of society? What goals do you have that are on a larger note? I mean, that are, instead of specific issues, like broader
issues? I mean, one of my ideas of society is that everyone, you know, goes along, gets along. You know, that there, you know, there's no crime, that, you know, that there's no divisions amongst the races, the divisions amongst youth and the old. I mean, that would be the ideal society, and I think we all have to strive to that. Whether or not we see it in this lifetime, I don't know. But that's, you know, if we all do our own little part on the local level, maybe we'll get to that. So that's what I try to do. Yes, sir.
Jeremy Leichnow, what role, if any, did religion play in your role in politics, including like family's religion and how that came from? You mentioned coming from a Catholic school, so I'm wondering if what role that might have played.
Religion plays a very big part with me, and I'd be a fool to say otherwise, because I've asked the good Lord to get me through many days of campaigning, to get me through a debate, just for other things. please don't let it rain on Election Day. But no, I mean, I'm not a diehard staunch Catholic. There's some views of the church that I disagree with, but I'm just not a one-issue person, you know. So I'm a Catholic. We attend Mass at St. Andrew's Catholic Church. We are married there, for my daughter will be we'll have her baptism. Good question. Any others? Well, you guys have been a good group. If you're ever near Precinct 5, I have a business card here. We'll leave some if you want to stop in and see our operations. Please do so. Thank you for having me out.
Thank you.
One more.
We want to thank you for coming to University of Texas Arlington today. On behalf of the Mexican-American politics class, we wish you much success and happiness in your future endeavors. Thank you.
Thank you very much.